Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bob, it would appear that Crowley's having more blowouts than the 07 Patriots. Did he mention that to you on his way out? He's flying to Ireland, as are you today. He's a nervous flyer. How do you do on a plane, especially one that's crossing an ocean?
Well, I would be nervous if I had blowouts going, because that's a difficult time. That's a long trip over there, and so you may have to go to the bathroom a few times.
Yeah. Anything to curb the blowout factor.
Yeah, I don't I don't mind flying. I can't sleep. That's my problem. And yeah. I'm not going to be able to sleep. So this is why you leave. Today, you get there tomorrow morning, and there's no sleep.
Right.
And you start a whole day fresh. So
you and Crowley also discovered that you're staying in the same hotel. Does that mean you two will be kibitzing? Will you be out on the town? I know you're both bringing your wives.
I've heard he's legendary at that. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it in action, seeing what happens.
He's going to walk off the plane drunk, Bob, because he's scared to begin with. He may walk onto the plane drunk.
I may do that too. Not drunk, but have a little bit. You got to calm yourself down on those things and try to fall asleep. I don't know. Do you have any answers for that? Do you take a, you know?
I just freak out.
And melatonin, then anything like that?
No, I go into deep breathing on the plane. And then, you know, the worst part is taking off and landing and the flight. They're all sort of equal.
Yeah. Well, Rich Walsh and I are going to go over there and we're going to be doing some stuff. I'm sure Adam will do the same thing with different pubs and different things that they have to show. So in addition to the game, because the team doesn't arrive there until Friday.
Mackey's already over there. You can break bread with him.
Yeah, he's been walking all over the place.
Limits, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful, guys.
Are you going to Ireland?
No, I wish I was, though.
What are you doing Saturday?
Maybe I could fit in Bob's
seat.
Well,
you know what he's doing Saturday.
I know what he's doing Saturday.
You know what I'm doing
he's
Saturday.
He's going to Pitt and Louisville, and he's going to want those Panthers to win that ACC action.
Big noon. No, I will be at the Whiteout.
Yep.
I'm going to leave at like 5 a.m. on Saturday.
Why not just sleep over the night before limits with friends?
That's always a better move.
Yeah.
Well, I want to, but we're doing KDK High School Football Friday.
You and Donnie?
Yeah, Upper St. Clair Peters Township. Really good matchup in the South Hills. So, I mean, if I drove up, I'd get there at like
1:30. It doesn't matter. You're going to be ramped up anyway. You're going to go home and just not sleep, so you may as well drive. That's my advice on that kind of situation.
I agree.
If you're working late, chances are you're on adrenaline
just go,
anyway.
Yeah.
You may
yeah.
as well just drive.
I did that last year.
Do it then, and then you can wake up at 7. You can still get 6 hours
right.
of sleep.
And then you're not going to feel terrible when you got to get up at 5 in the morning. And you're
the problem's finding a hotel, Bob. Where are you going to find a hotel? Does Limits have for your friends in State College?
Yeah, my sister's up there.
Oh,
she goes to school there.
Bob's 100% right then.
That's where I'm staying Saturday night, too.
I'd stay there
Friday night. I
understand,
but you should do... So you're going to wake up then Sunday and watch a Steeler game from your
sister's... Wake up Sunday, watch a Steeler game there, yeah.
Okay.
All right. We'll accept that. That's acceptable.
I'm excited. I'm very excited.
We're trying to use the wisdom we've gained in doing this kind of stuff to make your life a little better.
Last year, that's what I did. I drove up and I got there at like 1:30.
And what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with
that? It was fine. I might actually do that again.
Yeah, you should.
I'm thinking about it now. You're starting to convince me, Bob.
We've come full circle, just like Marc-Andre Fleury. Bob?
How about that? This weekend is going to be loaded with things.
Oh, yeah, that's Saturday,
that
too.
That's Saturday.
Is that game sold out? I keep asking people. Is it sold out?
If it is, it'll be close.
Tickets are going for $200. It's sold out or getting there?
Yeah.
How about for a preseason?
Can you look up the secondary market for that Limits as we're speaking?
Some tickets were going for over $1,000.
What?
Yeah, for a preseason game. And that's a testament to Marc-Andre Fleury. That really is. It's just how many other people can do that? You know, Sid would do that. All the elite players would do that. He is an elite player, but he's left several years ago. And here he comes back, and he's maybe more popular now than ever.
Well, Bob, that should be a six-pack item. We might even start out with that, but I wanted to let you know that I had a crown put on my tooth yesterday, and I was thinking going into it that it was just like a little filling that would take 2 seconds, and then right before I left, because I went to my appointment right after the show.
You didn't golf?
Limits asked me if they're putting me to sleep. He said, this is going to be a lot of pain, So then I start to freak out, and then I was going to call in sick for the appointment, except that my bottom left tooth in the back is crumbling. It's crumbling like the Cleveland Browns.
Or like the Cleveland Guard, or like the Detroit Tigers.
Crumbling like the Detroit Tigers in September. So, Bob, they basically did a rebuilding job on the thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like Ben Cherington.
I hope it went better than that. And
did you feel any pain?
Discomfort. Well, no, they gave shots but it was a bigger deal than I thought. Yeah. Dr. Kevin out in Fox Chapel, Kevin Polowitz, does an unbelievable job. So I felt very confident and safe with him. Great guy and longtime friend of the station. But then there's a little crevice in my bottom teeth in the back from when I got kicked in the teeth a long time ago in front of a bar called the Pink Flamingo in Buffalo.
You're still having lingering effects from something that happened at the Pink Flamingo? Pink Flamingo?
Yes. Yes. In fact, this tooth, my front tooth, is bonded. It's a long story, Bob.
I've had bondage.
Yeah, I was laughing at people in the bar, and then they started to beat up my friend Marshall Reinhardt, and instead of helping him, I ran. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I remembered is an army boot kicking me in the face and it smashed my teeth. So to make a long story longer, the back of one of my bottom teeth is only half a tooth. And that started to become problematic. And they put a filling on it yesterday. Mm-hmm. And now there's a different dynamic sort of every time I close my mouth. You know what I mean? My tongue goes to a different place.
Yeah, it takes time.
Something's different and I have to get used to that. That is more of a big deal than the crown in the back.
So they took care of it in one visit?
Yes,
normally
they did.
That's a two-visit process.
It was a double header.
Okay, because they have to mold your thing, and then you come back and they give you a temporary one, then a permanent one.
Great day to play two, Bob. They did two. Shall we go to a six-pack?
I think it's early. It's Ron Cook time of day, but yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Limits. Okay, we already started with Marc-Andre Fleury. So I'm going to start you with this one. I talked to the old 2-9er, the other guy that wore 2-9, for a lot of years and did so famously, especially really in his later years when he became the old 2-9er, Phil Bork. And man, he was telling me all kinds of things about Fleury, you know, behind the scenes, how he would help people out financially very quietly and all the things we know about Fleury and then some. And it was just something. And I wrote a piece this morning for the Post Gazette about this, but the gist of my piece was, like Fleury says, this will be a full circle moment. I would argue that it won't truly be full circle unless the Penguins retire that number 29. Bob, do you think they should?
Yes. Again, because of Stanley Cups. But then again, you know, Bork 29, he had an impact. You could maybe do a double 29, you know, half and half. Like when Fleury Murray were here, they had a half and half Fleury Murray.
A timeshare.
A timeshare with that. But yes, I agree with that. I think he's meant a lot to the franchise, and I think that will happen one day, just as it did with Jagr. Yesterday, the Penguins relaunched their Hall of Fame. They had four great members, and they're going to continue to add to it. I mean, it's just a matter of time when they decide to do it.
Do you think so, or do you think that they think because they've been very judicious so far that it's only reserved? See, I put Fleury in this category. Some may not. It's only reserved for true franchise icons. You know, Mario, Jagr, Sid, Crosby. Gino, maybe some people mm-hmm. think. I think Michel Briere was a special case, mm-hmm. tragically died young, and I think he was maybe headed on that path. That was sort of a different kind of case. I think some people might make the argument that the only two jerseys to be retired from this era, some may say just Sid. Some may say just Sid and Gino.
I would disagree with that. Or Sid and Gino, yes.
Who do you say?
I'd put Fleury in there. What he's meant to the franchise, just you talk about his status here in Pittsburgh, what it means, the fact that they're going to sell out a preseason game when tickets are going for a lot of money.
How much are they going for, Limits?
Yeah, I looked on one of the secondary markets. 89 is the cheapest ticket to get in, but if you want to be down by one of the goals, I see tickets for $765.
Wow. For a preseason game.
In which he's going
to play probably half of the game, I think.
And that's just the half of it. Really, truly, more importantly, this guy is the all-time franchise leader in shutouts, in goals against average, in wins.
All of them.
By a million miles.
And this is over a guy who, Tom Barrasso, is now in their Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, so.
And he delivered, I think, two Stanley Cups. Mm. One of them, he basically gave the Penguins their Mazeroski moment, a walk-off save in Game 7 against the mighty Red Wings and a Hall of Famer in Nicklas Lidström. The most dramatic save in NHL history. And then I think in Sully's second cup run, Marc-Andre Fleury was the single most important player. Because
in that Washington series.
Washington won the President's Trophy that year. 118 points. They outshot the Penguins in every game of that series, including 38-18 in a game that the Penguins won.
Yeah.
Fleury was the star. It was his play combined with the adoration that I think he should be a cinch to have his jersey retired. How about Letang?
Letang has been a tremendous player, but I mean, you can't put them all in. He would be one that's very close to me, but I would see how they feel about it. My gut would tell me no.
That would be a tough one, though, to put in.
As much respect as I have for Chris Letang, he's been a tremendous player.
I'm saying it would be a tough one to leave him out because the big four of this era are Sid, Gino, Letang, and Fleury. So I think if you put in Fleury, you got to put in Letang. That would be a tough look to put in three.
That would be. But again, you know, Chris Kunitz had a big role in some of those things. In fact, maybe the most important goal in that run to another Stanley Cup. It just depends on how they look at it. I look at Fleury, I guess, differently than a lot of guys in that what he was able to do, that save, you talk about Lidstrom, how about the save on Ovechkin? The glove save.
Glove save and then the knob of the stick save in game seven, 8 years later.
And those plays, you know, it's like a Frank Pietrangelo moment. Those are things you remember for the rest of your life. Most young people out there wouldn't know who he is.
Right.
But he made one of those saves that catapulted them to where they had to go. So, you know, those are always tough decisions. I'm 50-50 on Chris, but I would definitely do Marc-Andre Fleury.
Next. It's going to be quite a night. Well, there's something big happening tonight with the Pirates. And that is Paul Skeens on the mound against Hunter Green in what should be one of the best pitching matchups, God bless me, of the year. The Pirates dealt the Reds a big blow last night, but the story tonight is Skeens, Bob. And here are the questions. Are you ready for this?
Let's go.
He's 10-10.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to become, I believe he would be the first starting pitcher to ever win the Cy Young with a losing record. Am I right about that?
That's correct.
Yes.
I think there was a reliever way back when who did it. So is he going to finish with a winning record, a losing record, or will he get a no decision? And then to me, just as big, if not bigger, is can he put that ERA under 2? I think it's at 2.03 and change.
2.03, yeah.
Do they not round up in baseball, Bob? Because by my calculations, it's 203.6, which should be 2.04, right? If it's 2.03...
Your math is better than mine.
Do they not carry up? I don't know if they do or not, but it could become pertinent tonight.
What would it take for him to lower it to 1.99?
Thank you for asking.
7 innings of shutout baseball?
4 innings of shutout baseball would do, Bob.
How about if he goes 4 innings and he gets to that 1.99 and they take him out?
Okay, let's get right to that question. Because 4 innings of, just let me say this, 4 innings of shutout would do it, obviously 5 or 6. If he gives up 1 run, by my calculations, please don't quote me on this out there, although I did have a calculator. He could do it with 1 run in 8 innings. That's possible too. But you hit on the question. If he throws 4 innings of shutout ball and clinches a 1.99 ERA, do you take him out of the game?
I would say yes.
So would I.
He deserves it after everything he's gone through and the fact that his wins, and he wouldn't get a win or a loss in that case. But 10-10, I don't even look at that. I look at all the other stuff. 1.99 would be historic for a team that's a last place team. You'd have to go back a long way. And I was trying to find this yesterday and I could not find an example. And maybe I'm just not completing the task of doing it, but I don't think anyone has had a 1.99 ERA with as many innings as he's pitched for a last place team.
Well, I was reading a story on MLB.com today. Limits, maybe you can do the math. It might even be 3 2/3 innings.
Well, I would leave him out.
To finish the inning. You know who would be really, really angry if Skeens was pitching a shutout after 4
The
innings?
New York Mets.
Andrew Filippone and his fellow, I don't know, is he still a Mets fan? And his fellow New York Mets fans.
Oh, they would be.
And that's another part of this question. And I get it, but too bad.
Too bad. I mean, the Mets... created their situation by falling apart. The Pirates are not there to help them out. They're trying to do what's best for their player, and they're putting guys in like Hunter Barco last night got in. And some would say, well, you're playing a rookie in a game that's meaningful to the Reds. You're not there to satisfy Terry Francona or the Reds. You're trying to do what's good for your business. And if that means Paul Skeens goes 4 shutout and you take him out, so be it. Mets go win. You now control your own destiny. Win out. That's what I would say.
Limits, Paul Skeens, pitches, whatever the threshold is tonight. And I'm a little confused between whether it, well, let's just say four, because I know with four shutout innings, he would get it to 199. Would you take him out?
I would stretch it to five just to see if you could be able to earn him the victory, too.
Oh, that's a good point. That doesn't even matter.
But then he could go 11 and 10 instead of 10 and 10.
It doesn't matter.
What if they're not ahead?
This is a
limits?
Cy Young conversation and 1.99. If you take him out there and he gives up a run of the fifth, it doesn't go to 1.99.
I think I take him out.
What if they're not ahead, so are we factoring in maybe he gave up an unearned run and they're losing like 1-0 going into the fifth inning and you take him out after four because he hasn't given up an earned run?
Now you're hopelessly complicating this. If he doesn't allow an earned run in four innings.
You said what if they're not leading?
I don't know. You're the one who complicated it.
No,
I don't know what the question is now.
I added another avenue to it.
Bob?
I already did. I said he would be out of there. I don't care about his record, and I don't care about the Cincinnati Reds. I'm doing what's best for my player, and the fact that he could get – it's a rare thing to get a 1.99 ERA despite all the innings and on a last-place team. I'm taking him out. And
that's why
I'm
we giving, made Bob eight figures.
That's right. Yeah. More like nine.
That was well said, Bob, and I agree with every syllable you just
and
said.
And half syllable. You're supposed to say both now.
So limits.
Half syllables matter when you're talking about four and a half or three and two-thirds or anything. So,
so do quarter syllables, Bob. Limits, you're telling me that this guy allows no earned runs and his ERA dips below 199, and if Limits is managing the Pirates, let's call him Limits Kelly.
Yes.
You're putting him back out there. Now, what if he allows a homer and everything's ruined? Wouldn't you be
it's
ashamed?
It's Paul Skeens. I have confidence that he's not going to do that because he's the best pitcher in baseball. So if he can't go another one inning, three more outs to get, like let's say you have a 1-0 lead, to be able to get that 11th victory to be able to push him over the edge to not have a 500 record. Yeah, I'd be willing to go three more outs considering what he's shown all season long.
That's why we pay him two figures, Bob.
I don't understand. What am I missing in your argument there? What's the difference of 5 innings and 4 innings?
He wants Skeens to get the victory.
Again,
and if you go 5 innings, then you can earn the victory.
It's not like they're going to score off Hunter Green anyway.
They took out Johan Oviedo last night after 4 2/3, and he was mad about it, but that's a different situation. But Paul Skeens does not need another win to validate what this has been, a Cy Young slam dunk season.
Remember when Hunter Green no-hit them on Easter and they still won the game 1-0?
Now, if you have exactly. Yeah, how about if you have a no-hitter going and all this is.
What if he has a perfect game shutout?
Well, then you just keep going.
You do? Yes.
Yeah.
So you're abandoning that?
No, I'm not abandoning it. You said it's a difference between scoreless and perfect game.
What if he has a perfect game after 5?
Keep on keeping
6.
On. Keep on keeping on.
7.
Keep on keeping on.
I fully agree. He's a perfect game going? Yes. You let him go out there.
Keep on keeping on.
How often do you have a perfect game into the 7th inning?
Perfect game, 110 pitches after 7.
Well, that's a different situation.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you didn't say that. With the caveat of how many, I'm going to blow out his arm on the last game of the year.
So,
I'm not going to do
so
that.
So honest question then, what's the threshold on number of pitches?
100.
Okay.
But I don't know that he, again, 4 innings, he may only need 70 or 60.
That's
or
all
whatever.
Fair, Bob, and I respect you deeply. And I agree with you, actually. Are you nervous about your flight to Ireland today?
No. I just want to sleep. I want to sleep.
Do they still serve meals on long-distance flight, or all you get are those little cinnamon crackers?
It's not the way it used to be, I don't think. But, whatever. If you're trying to sleep, I don't necessarily want to eat anything. I'll eat before then.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Did flights actually used to be like Home Alone 2, where they had that big, like, four-course meal that they serve?
Oh,
yes.
We could take you back.
Seriously?
Joe and I will tell you what it was like.
Oh, yeah, you get dessert. You,
you
get
actual silverware, too.
You get prime rib and real silverware?
Yeah.
Do you remember when they took the salt shakers and they said, throw this in your purse, the uncle, the weird uncle?
That's what you did. Now they take the little packet of cinnamon crackers and basically throw it in your face, and that's it, Bob.
I do like those crackers, though. They're tasty.
I take those home, don't you, Limits?
I ask for an extra pack sometimes.
Known to ask my neighbor in the row. If you're not getting those, may I?
Wow, a stranger in the row.
Yeah. I take those cinnamon crackers, Bob.
How about that? Hello, not my name is Joe Starkey. Can I please have your cinnamon crackers?
Absolutely. There's no shame when it comes
to
those.
But it was totally different back then. I mean, and not only that, I mean, the seats were bigger, it seemed. There was more ways to stretch out. Now everything's condensed.
How about fact that people smoked? And the idea that if you're in row 11, you're in the smoking section, but row 12, you're non-smoking as the guy in front of you blows smoke in your face. Remember that? Well, you don't limit.
I had one of the worst experiences flying to Hawaii.
What happened?
You're talking about blowing smoke. I'm talking about blowing out. This guy was sitting next to me.
And oh, he had, no.
Yes. And I didn't know what to do. He was just and he knew it. He could have said something. I don't know if that would have changed anything, but I mean, air was just filled with that. Oh, it was the worst, and that's a long flight.
Bigger blowouts than the Aces Fever game last night. That's the last thing you need is a guy blowing out next to you on a long distance flight.
And I could tell that he thought because it wasn't audible, he had silencers going on, so he didn't want to take responsibility for it. And I think you always should. I'm very much aware of that, and I'm sorry.
Well, what do you mean? Do you admit it? You say, excuse me, listen, we both, obvious, you know and I
it's
know.
It's pretty obvious that there's somebody doing it.
I know, but do you announce it out loud? You know and
how
I know
if he
I'm
said,
having more blowouts.
How about if he said, I would know, to my neighbor or whatever, I'd say,
for your
excuse
neighbor.
Me. I got a gassy stomach. And if he doesn't...
See, I would never say that.
Okay, but somebody is a culprit here.
Yeah.
And then he may say to me, was that you? And knowing full well it was him. And I'm saying, no, it wasn't me. I know me. And I know when I'll do it, I'll admit it. That was yours. And then what does that turn into next?
That could turn into hostilities. Limits, have you had similar experiences on flights?
That could turn into the cinnamon crackers being thrown at you, not being thrown to you to be able to eat. Thankfully, no. I've not had that many poor experiences on flights. I've been fortunate. I also have only taken like 6 or 7 flights in my life.
Next.
All right.
So the PM guys had a really interesting topic at the start of their show yesterday, Bob. Pony brought it up that Mike Tomlin has one of the greatest or the greatest record in one score games ever. And pointed out that he's 24-11 in one score games since Ben left. And Pony basically said that while he's still not a Tomlin fan, and I'm paraphrasing here, he's got to hand him that one. He's simply good in those one score games, and that is very significant. To which I would answer this, and he was looking for people to give him dissuading arguments, and I was sending Malzi and Donnie Football, the obvious opposing view to, this is just something you have to concede to Tomlin. He's great in close games. Look at their one score record since Ben. Okay, 24-11 in one score games since Ben left. That in and of itself looks very impressive. But he's only 6-11 in two score games. Why do one score games take precedent over two score games? And if you add the playoff games, he's 6-13 in two score games. And furthermore, and related to said topic, Mike Tomlin has a penchant for turning what should be two score wins into one score wins because he loves to play that mud fest football. So let me read you some of the quarterbacks that they've become mired in mud fests with on this allegedly impressive 24-11 record in one score games since Ben left. These are teams, these are quarterbacks of those 24 one-score wins that the Steelers have barely beaten since Ben left. Ancient Matt Ryan, Marcus Mariota, broken Andy Dalton, Derek Carr about 3 games before he quit, Tyler Huntley twice they turned into a one-score game, Deshaun Watson, bad Jimmy Garoppolo, bad and old Ryan Tannehill, Geno Smith, old and broken Kirk Cousins, Aiden O'Connell, if that's his name,
yes,
and the Giants version of Daniel Jones. That's like 11 of those 24 wins that should have been way more comfortable. And Tomlin's on the record himself when he fired Matt Canada as saying, we got to engineer victory more fluidly. Yeah, you're damn right you do. Their overall record since Ben left is barely over 500, and they have a minus point differential. So why are we cherry-picking a 24-11 record in one-score games as if this is something you just have to concede? No, I don't, because there's other numbers that undermine it. Bob?
Well, I think both points are well taken. Number one, the idea is to win no matter how, and all those guys you mentioned were at different points of their careers for sure. But you still got to win those games. And yes, I do agree that a lot of those multiple touchdown win games became one score games because of the method they choose to employ as this game went on.
Yes.
So instead of going for the jugular, they were going for the breaks. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that influences those numbers. I still think winning is the ultimate thing. And I'm never going to discredit a team or a coach for a win record during the regular season because ultimately that's what you're supposed to do, regardless of the talent you have.
Sure. And he's 40.
But I would say this, they've, you know, looking back at Mike's career, I think they've missed, when you have a Ben Roethlisberger and a, you know, Killer Bees and all that lineup they had, they missed opportunities where they were in position to win, and for whatever reason, they didn't.
So I would come back to, why accentuate 24 and 11 in one score games when I can come right back and say he's 6 and 13 in two score and more games?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why is the first one more revealing or more important than the second one?
That's talk radio, my man. That's a cute.
you could look
at games differently that way. Like this past weekend, I think many people thought and felt uncomfortable with the fact that they won a game, and yet we've taken calls, people upset about it. It's about winning, yes, but I think when you dive deeper into it, you see the cause and effect. Why did you win? How did you win?
How does it translate to when you right. need to win big games? Thank you, Bob, for that.
And that's the thing that has to change. The bigger games,
right.
you
got
to win them, and you can't be losing the way they're losing.
Or winning the way they're winning is what I would argue, because the seeds for their postseason failures, if they get there, are planted even during these one-score wins when you're beating Tyler Huntley and the Ravens JV team twice by one score. That's a team that's probably going nowhere, that beats Marcus Mariota by one score, that beats broken Aiden O'Connell by one score. No relation to Neil O'Donnell, Bob. Next, and that leads me to this. And I want to see if I can articulate this because it's related. Ray Fittipaldo had a story today. How are the Steelers in first place? The guy who works with Colin Cowherd, that is a terrible 2-1 team. We keep wondering, every year, at different points in the season, how in the blank do the Steelers have a winning record? How are they in first place in the division? How are they 2-1 when they're getting outgained by 470 yards? This could be this year. It could be any other year. How did they reel off 6 of 9 at the end of this season to make the playoffs? How are they doing this when the analytics and the eye test tell you they're really average? And I would say this, that asking those questions and in some ways looking at it and admiring them for outperforming the analytics and the eye test, that's a compliment to Tomlin and the Steelers. But within that compliment are the seeds of worry and ultimate doom for these seasons. Because if you keep having to ask, how are they doing this? Because I don't think they're that good. Then ultimately you're going to get your answer, because they're not that good. That's what. We asked these questions when they were 11-0
Correct.
In 2020. And guess what? We were right. We've marveled at how they've outplayed the analytics. The analytics tell us every year the long-run story. The analytics have been right. If the analytics are telling us this year and every other year that this is a team that really shouldn't win a playoff game, guess who's been right? The analytics.
The analytics, yes.
Do you know what I mean,
yes,
Bob?
Yes, sir. And it's about how. And when you watch it closely, you come to the realization that those trends do continue as you go through the season. In other words, you're not going to just snap your fingers and say, okay, we're going to be a highly productive offensive team as we go into the playoffs and score 35 when you haven't scored more than 17 all year. That's what you're referring to. The numbers say this team, based on what we've seen over the course of 17 games, cannot win if they have to play that way. It
right.
has to be, to use your word, a slogfest or whatever you called it, And that's what the analytics will tell you. So, but again, I put, you know, winning is still the ultimate thing for me. And during the regular season, you got to get to where you have to go. Winning is the way to do
it. And how are they doing in the biggest games winning?
Not well at all. And again, that goes back to your point. The analytics throughout the course of the season will tell you this.
Right.
Will tell you this is why odds makers look at those analytics and say, how did they win that game when they were outgained by as much as they were in, for example, the New England game? You know, theoretically, if you want to look at it, the Steelers could be 0-3.
Yeah,
you know,
or 3-0.
Or that's how close they play it. And turnovers are still a big part of it. And I would debate those who say that it does matter. And if you make those plays, you make those plays. That was part of their game plan last week, to force turnovers. Now, it never is good to see them want 17 plays down the field knocking on the door, because now you limit your possibility of maybe making one of those big plays and they score. Is there an element of luck? Yeah. If you jar the ball loose, somebody's got to fall on it, and luck determines who it is. Just like Jonnu Smith fumbled and it went out of bounds. If that doesn't go out of bounds, they're going to go the other way, probably the way they were moving. So all of that matters, but I get what you're saying. The trends, and this is why if the Steelers were getting in the playoffs, they'd be probably an underdog wherever and whoever they play.
And why I say that it's not really imaginable for me that they're going to make any kind of meaningful run. I hope to be proven wrong. But it's not just the deep analytics. It's also the simple eye test. They've been outgained by 470 yards. So, yes, it's a compliment to say, wow, in spite of that, they're 2-1. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But it's also, as I said, a seed of worry and a seed of long-range failure being forecast. If you have to keep admiring them for overcoming their apparent averageness, then maybe their apparent averageness is what's ultimately going to manifest. It always does, and why should we believe differently now? People say, I heard the morning show, well, people are comparing the Steelers to the last 7 or 8. Yeah, you're damn right we are. Show us something different, and we won't. This is more of the same. We're asking the same questions as always.
Again.
Sitting here again talking about the same things.
Yeah, that was well timed there, Limits. That was well timed. Because that's
what
it is.
You're spoiled, Bob. You're spoiled.
No, I think people do get spoiled after a while of expecting whatever they expect from a team, and that goes for all teams. But I think the reality is this is a team that has to prove that they can buck those trends and start doing the kinds of things. This is one of the reasons why they brought in Metcalf and Aaron Rodgers, because at least for this season, they thought those guys would make a big difference in their offensive production. So far it hasn't, but I think a lot of that has to do with offensive line, and we'll see how it goes from here on. But the trend is the same. You're right. When you have a minus 417-yard differential, that's not good. You know that, and I don't know what the point differential is. It's minus.
Yeah.
Well, you're 2-1 with a minus point differential. That in and of itself tells you a lot.
You've been favored in all three games. You should at least be 2-1. So maybe it does come together. Maybe there are encouraging signs with Jabril Peppers, with Derek Harmon, getting healthier defensively. And the schedule opened up a little bit. But until I see it, this feels like more of the same. Limits, one more before we move ahead. Thank you. Very kindly. Bob, this involves one of our very own employees here, a man affectionately known as Malsy.
He won a golf tournament yesterday. Did you see that?
Yes. Josh Rountree, who works for the WPGA.
Right. Yeah. Western Pennsylvania Golf Association.
Sent me the official title of the tournament Malsy won. Yesterday, he was the overall winner of the 9th WPGA Net Championship, taking the Richard Falchetti, is that the name? Trophy at your club.
At Chartiers.
Malsy shot a 78 and won a tournament. It's basically for people who have handicaps, I think, over 4. Is that right, Bob?
I'm not sure of that, but yeah, it's, you know.
That's pretty impressive. He said net adjusted to 68.
Well, that's a Stableford system, I believe they play, which is you get points for pars and birdies. Bogeys, I think you take them away, and doubles are worse. So 78, and the thing about his round yesterday, as he explained it to me, and I applaud this because Chartiers is a hard golf course. I mean, I know the greens up there, they made it. It's a par 70, so that means you don't have par fives all over the place to try to make. He had 10 pars and 8 bogeys. No birdies, but no double bogeys. That's how you win in a Stableford system. And he did it, and he has a crystal glass trophy to show for it.
Our applause to Malzi, gentlemen. Here we go. Limits. Let's give him
a great job, Malzi.
That is
I'll tell
very
you what, he's taking his game, and I don't know if he works at it or not, but working on it probably means playing more because we don't have time to practice.
He does, right? Yeah.
Your game has taken off, too.
I mean, game stinks.
No, man. I mean, you don't give yourself enough credit for being a three-year golfer.
Well, the only thing I can do, and I was thinking about this in my walk into the building today, I have reached the point where I can go out with good golfers, and I'm not...
I've seen it.
I'm not out of place in terms of, why is that blank blank going to look for his ball again? I can keep pace. I'm usually a shot behind. If like, you're going to finish 15 to 18 shots ahead of me, which is fine. I'm going to get a 5, you're going to get a 4, but it's going to be consistent from hole to hole, and I can keep up in that way, like physically keep up, and I'm happy about that.
I tell you what, that's the ultimate thing. And for it to get better, you just got to play more and practice more. That's it. But I think I've watched you progress from never picking up a club, hating golf, to where you're now picking up all sorts of clubs and loving
still
golf.
Still hating golf,
No,
it's a love-hate relationship, Bob.
Ryder Cup week, it's going to be fun.
Well, coming up next.
That's another part of the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Austin,
there's all kinds of things.
Yeah, and all these games, and then you throw that in.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Talk on the Fan, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started. Today, it's Pomp and Joe. Bob, you're down to a final hour. You're going to Ireland tonight. Y'all packed, or does your wife do your packing?
No,
how does that work?
She packs. She does it. I don't, and I have to do a little bit more when I get home.
And what time's your flight?
It's later, early evening. I forget the exact time.
And what's the flight plan from here to where and then where to Ireland?
It's a direct flight.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was such a thing.
Well,
are you flying private? Are you on a private plane?
It's a charter. So.
Whoa! Bob!
You're going with the team.
Well, they have multiple, not the team. The team's not going until tomorrow. So... I mean, there are ways you can do this. You just have to explore options.
It's all who you know, Bob. This is incredible. Will there be food served on the plane, Bob?
Will the tail of the plane say Steelers on it?
No. No.
Will it say Pomp? Pomp and Ain't Easy on it?
It might.
I don't know.
All I know
is you're going to wake up tomorrow in Ireland.
Right.
That is so cool.
We go right to work and do our thing, and there's going to be a lot. I'm anxious. There's two things. The Guinness area that they have, where they make a lot of it, how they do it, and also the Jameson. Are you a Jameson fan?
No, but he is, right?
You like Jameson?
Didn't you say you're a Jameson guy, or am I mistaken?
I'm a Captain guy, but I like Jameson too.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm fascinated with that whole process and how many people do that. Plus, there'll be no shortage of Steeler fans. Everybody has a story.
What time will you land?
I'm not sure. It's early in the morning.
Who was I telling? Crowley yesterday? Somebody. That when I went to Ireland in 1997, it was an overnight flight, and the sun was rising over Ireland as we went into our descent, and I have never seen a sight like that. The greenest green you've ever seen.
They have some great, that island, man, they have all sorts of like cliffs and different areas that you can get to. It's
incredible.
And then if you like golf, Joe, that would be the,
You have to play golf on this trip, Bob.
We'll find, that's hard to do. But in Scotland, it's similar. It's unbelievable. There are some great golf courses in Ireland, so
get out nice and early on Saturday, Bob. It'll be done by 10 a.m.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about having a five-hour head start.
Are you bringing your clubs?
No.
You'll rent them if you get there?
Yeah, there's always ways to rent.
That would be incredible. All right, let's get to Ben's podcast. Man, was he full of opinions this week.
This is the most opinionated Ben's ever been on the podcast, I think.
It's called Footballin', and you start where you want, Limits, and you just say what the topic is, we'll listen, and then Bob and I will riff for a little while, okay?
Yeah, we have five different things on Ben, and I think one of the most noting is Bob, Ben, not much of a fan of Broderick Jones, at least at the moment.
He's been getting hit. Okay, no sacks. Congratulations. Aaron still got hit a bunch. There's a play where Broderick Jones is standing completely upright, and the guy basically runs right through him. It's actually the play we laughed about when his guy hit Aaron as soon as he threw it, and Broderick ran by. Remember, yanked his shoulder out of place? That play, if you go back and watch it, because I went back and watched two plays specifically to watch the line play. Broderick is, he's so upright, and you can't stand upright as a tackle. You've got to get low because guys are just going to get underneath you. James Harrison, what do you talk about? Leverage. You get a guy. Like, if James Harrison was going against Broderick Jones, he'd have 15 sacks a game. I'm telling you, the low leverage he's going to get around Broderick has to be better in protecting.
So, Bob, my first thought is, where's the coaching with this guy? You have a natural talent like this. Or is the coaching there and he's just not taking to it? What's your thought?
It's probably a combination of both, but I think Ben's absolutely right. It's a leverage game with those guys. And when you're 6'6" and... you know, you have to make a point. Harrison was always good at that. He would just go so low, and he's quick. He would take advantage of most left tackles, and there were so many holding calls that weren't called. In this case, he has to do that better. I agree with Ben that Rodgers got hit, I still put, you know, it's a game of numbers and metrics, and they had zero sacks allowed. That was mostly because Aaron Rodgers is dinking and dunking. If you look at the passing chart, and that's something that they have to improve on. They cannot have just a whole bunch of dinking and dunking. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of having Metcalf in there for now?
I'm not giving any points for not getting him sacked. I've heard people on the station talking about that. 0 points you get for that. When the game plan, it's easy to avoid sacks if you're willing to do that at all costs. You just get rid of the ball real quick.
But this is year three for Broderick Jones.
He still took a pounding. Rodgers took at least 5 good shots in that game.
And he wasn't happy with, I don't know if it was Broderick or other parts of that line. I don't know that Sam Alu's had... you know, the kind of year that you'd expect him to have, too. And I don't know if those two are not working together in harmony. Maybe that's one of the problems.
Bob, how long for Broderick Jones? I think Calvin Anderson would be the logical replacement. How long can you, like I said, people thought he really improved in week 2 and week 3. I didn't think so. He wasn't as obviously bad to the untrained eye as he was in week 1. Mm-hmm. Anybody can see when you're getting cleanly beat on the pass rush, right? But you can still be really bad in the run game and more subtly bad as a pass rusher and not have everybody notice it and still get poor grades. How long can this continue?
Well, I always say number one picks have 9 lives. They're not going to, you know, immediately do anything. I think you go through this game coming up and it won't be easy against Minnesota. I think they have an underrated defense. And then you have a bye week. I think what will happen is they'll let him play, see how he plays. They'll go through the bye, make adjustments. If this continues beyond the bye week, then they may be forced to do something. But I'm not going to give up on him yet. He has too much talent. He's just got to put it together, whether that's him, the coaching, both. They can't have – and everybody knew this. You can't put Rodgers under that much pressure because ultimately it's going to knock him out. It's just – most people believe. I think Ben Roethlisberger agrees with that too. He's taken enough. He knows how it works.
Twinning is everything. Let me take a little break here before we go to your next clip, okay? Because I just saw up on the screen that teams that start in the Super Bowl era since 1966, teams that start 1-3 only make the playoffs 10.6% of the time. Well, guess who's going to start 1-3, Bob?
The Chiefs or the Ravens.
The Chiefs or the Ravens. Which one of those teams do you think would make the playoffs still at 1-3? Yeah. You think the Chiefs wouldn't?
No.
I think both would.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, so
I think the Chiefs are going to sneak
in. The Chargers are going to win that division the way it's going.
Or the Broncos. Yeah.
But if they both get in, the Broncos, I don't think there's room for the Chiefs. That's, you know, nobody from the East will get there except the division winner.
Right. Nobody from the South except the division winner.
Okay, so that's 2. I think 2 from the AFC North.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, we'll see then. If the door opens up for them.
Well, that would leave 3 from the AFC
Well, then
West.
At some point, who else are we missing here who's off to a better start? It won't be Cincinnati. It probably won't be any of those teams. Cleveland, Denver, yes, I think they have a chance.
You're not missing anybody.
Can the Texans turn it around
conference.
At 0-3? If 1-3 is bad, 10%, what's 0-3?
Could the South get two with the Colts and the Jags?
Yeah, the Colts are a team.
Maybe the Jags that you're
forgetting. The Colts, we're forgetting about the Colts. Indiana Jones and what he's doing, man.
Well, no, we're not, because we think they're going to win the division now, okay. Don't we? Maybe.
Yes. Jags are better than I think most people thought at the beginning of the season. So, yeah, maybe them.
Maybe, but...
Yeah, you're right. Both might be in even despite 1-3. They both have... Look at the Ravens' schedule. It gets a little easier after this game, and it should. I mean, they've been... If you look at who they lost to, Buffalo, legit Super Bowl. Detroit, legit Super Bowl.
Sure.
And if they lose to Kansas City, at least you know that's a really dynamic team that's won three of these things.
Right.
So then it can't get any harder than that. Although I wonder about the Ravens' psyche at this point.
You know,
the way they're going and the way they've blown leads and all of this stuff, man, they got beat up. They made Lamar Jackson look a little slower than he normally is. And their run game in Detroit is just phenomenal. There's not a better run game in the league with those two.
Nobody's ever won the AFC North 3 years in a row. Can the Ravens buck that trend? Man, if you start 1-3, you got to think maybe not. I mean, maybe not. I didn't mean maybe not, Bob. I meant maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah. I don't know. I still think they're going to be in the playoffs. They have
so
too much talent.
I think they're still going to win the division. I think they're going to win this weekend. Do you?
Yeah, I would bet that they would be Kansas City. Kansas City still has a lot of problems. They were lucky they took on the Giants, and the Giants are a mess right now until Jackson Dart gets into the game this week. A lot of people think maybe it's too early to put Jackson Dart in, but I think Brian Daboll has to. He has to do something to turn the conversation and the narrative around on him. He's right. I don't know how much years he has as a contract, but if they don't go well this year after what they did.
If they don't go well this week and next week, it could be his only chance right now is to say, I drafted Dart, and look, he's making progress.
Jackson Dart. Gunnar Olszewski gets a first down for the Giants.
And he has Gunnar to throw to. I don't think Matt Canada would have been back after Kenny's rookie year if Kenny hadn't played pretty well down the stretch, at least later in games. I think that saved his job. And I think Jackson Dart's progression, if it happens, would save Daboll's job. It's the only thing that can at this point. Limits, what else did Ben say?
Well, Ben currently has his hand over the panic button with this offensive line.
It's a little bit cause for concern, okay? Like the panic button is sitting here, right? It's in the glass case. You gotta flip the glass case open, then flip the little red thing, then hit the button, okay? This team, I'm not the team... As a Steeler fan, I'm just looking at the button. Okay, I'm just looking at. I'm not even ready to flip the first glass case up yet. Okay, but when I start thinking about my line play, my hand is right here, getting ready to flip the case up. I'm not. I haven't flipped the glass case up and then flipped the little red thing and then flipped it. So I got a couple more, but my hand is like, because I'm concerned with the line because I think what it's doing is it's preventing the team. I know that part of it. Preventing the Steelers from opening up the offense.
And that's exactly what Tim Benz asked Mike Tomlin yesterday, essentially what Benz asked him. You know, all this talk of we're shorthanded on defense and we have injuries and new guys, so schematically we can't do what we want. Well, Benzie got to thinking, Bob, and jumped off the top rope during this conference.
You asked earlier if the secondary issues were perhaps limiting some of the things or making you hold back some of the things that you could do on defense. Are you at all being forced to hold back some things you might be able to do on offense because of some of the pass protection concerns?
No.
Ben thinks otherwise. Benzie thinks otherwise. I think otherwise. That offensive line is holding them back.
But I don't think he wants that information out there from his mouth. He's not going to say
that.
Yeah,
I hear that. Yeah.
So a lot of that stuff is just...
But do you agree?
I do. I think, again, I look at pass charts, and I think it's very obvious that they're dinking and dunking more than they would like. That's not to say that's an effective play. It is an effective play when it's done smartly. But if you do it all the time, I think the defense senses that they're winning. So, yeah, you got to be able to do more. And they have for those long patterns down the field to work, he needs more than 2.5 seconds.
They're working around an offensive line that they drafted to build. It's like something that you have to, you know, compensate for instead of something that enables you to thrive. Next.
Ben also believes, as we look ahead to the Vikings, Brian Flores would have been better to keep him in-house.
You ready for this?
Yes.
Flores.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You heard it here, guys. I'm crossing out my W.
Hold on. I'm punching in on Evan.
And I'm putting an L. Okay. There it is. Sorry. I don't. In my heart of hearts.
Break it down for us.
I mean, I want us to win, obviously. Yeah. I think we might, but I just feel like it's, you know, they do like the poll of the nation. The poll of me is 55% loss, 45. You know what I'm saying? It's very close. Like, it just feels like there's a little bit, that needle's moving like this. And it's because I'm afraid of our line that it's, they're not going to get it done. And they're going to, and Flores is going to take advantage of it because he's a very good defensive coordinator. He knows what he's doing. We never should have let him go. And he's going to find a way to attack. And our defense isn't going to be able to do enough to keep us in the game.
That Ben sounds like you, Joe.
Ben hasn't been this hot since he threw six touchdowns against the Colts, Bob. I mean, that's everything I think about this game, about Brian Flores. You?
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a lot of respect for him. And I thought once he got here, they would somehow, you know, you could create any role you want. You can call him the assistant head coach, associate this, associate that. He's just a good guy to have in your locker room, in your coaching staff, and I think players respond to him in the way. And however you want to divvy up, you know, the responsibilities, there's always room for a good coach. You know, again, however they want to name it and title.
Mike Tomlin should have handed his defense to Brian Flores.
Well, even if he didn't want to, he could have brought him in and say, you guys work together. Flores is my associate head coach, and you guys do what you got to do.
I don't know if Flores does that, though, because he knows he can go elsewhere and get a job to himself.
Maybe, but I'm just saying they should have done what they could to keep him around. It's good to have guys and different opinions and different success rates when it comes to how they employ defense.
Sure, but I think they came to the point where he was going to get a job elsewhere. Are you going to give me the job here, or would he be offered the job here? And it doesn't sound like that ever happened because Mike Tomlin likes to have his hands all over this. It's his
defense. And that's
fine.
You can keep that. But it doesn't hurt to have more people.
But he wouldn't have stayed as an advisor. What Tomlin should have done, which he has trouble doing, is step aside and say, it's yours. Instead of having Terrell Austin as a figurehead coordinator and Tomlin still be the coordinator.
Well, and if that were the case, then yeah, that was something they should have considered for sure. And I say that out of total respect for, Brian Flores, because of the knowledge he had, because of the fact when they brought him in here first, I knew what Mike Tomlin was doing. He was throwing out a lifeline to him after all of that stuff that happened in Miami and after his lawsuit and all this stuff. But once he got here, I thought, man, this guy's going to be here for a while. I really did. And it just didn't happen.
Didn't happen. He's too good of a coach. And man, has he been good in Minnesota? I think he's going to get another head coach.
Oh, he will
job.
Do that. Yes.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. What do we have next, Limits? What else did Ben say? A couple more?
Yeah, we do have a couple more from Ben. Ben wants to see a little bit of a change in how the tight ends are used, and also Ben questions the coaching again.
That's the one I want to hear next. That's the one I want to hear. We'll play it for you next, and then Bob and I will give our thoughts. This Skeens thing has taken off a little bit on social media, Bob. The thing I'm talking about is Skeens goes in with a 2.03 ERA. If he pitches, there's different equations here. It might even be 3 2/3, but just 4 innings of shutout ball will get him back under 2. One of the few pitchers in recent history, maybe there have been 50 or so ever, to finish with an ERA under 2 in this amount of innings. So 4 innings of shutout ball, what do you do? Somebody suggests you leave it up to Skeens. I think that's reasonable.
I do too. I mean, if he wants to do it, then it's his choice. If I approach him and tell him, look, you have a chance to do something that not many people ever have done. And that's end the year with a sub ERA, despite your 35 starts, whatever it is. And if he says, well, I'm okay with that. If I get to that point, yeah, you could. Or if he says the other thing, it should be up to him. And I think always those conversations happen, you know, especially in something like this.
I would completely understand if he wanted to leave the game and keep it under 2. But something tells me that Skeens would want to keep pitching if he's locked in it's a huge baseball game, not really for the Pirates, but as far as the playoff race goes, this is a giant game tonight. I think if he's locked in a battle with Hunter Green, he's going to want to stay in. Do you, Limits?
I fully agree with that. Yeah, just a competitor in you. I mean, plus it's your last start. You know, you're not going to take the hill again until spring training in
maybe that's
February.
Why you take it out of his hands, though. Maybe you say, yeah, you know, I mean, what, you're done. I know you want to keep going. We want to preserve this for you.
Right. And I think they've been doing that all along anyway, I think. So this would continue that trend. I don't think that their plan was to let him go as, you know.
But four innings is not meant. What if it's a 4 innings, 45 pitches?
Well, again, they have to make that decision when they get to it. If he's really going and he says, I can keep going at that level, then do it. But I think he has to be consulted in this for sure. By the way, did you see the throw that Rafael Flores, first chance seeing him as a catcher last night?
Yeah.
Pretty impressive throw to gun down a guy.
That's going to be an interesting spring training battle. Let's hope they bring in some actual baseball players who are already good that there's not other, like, I don't want a left field competition.
No.
I want a guy who's good playing left field. You know, I don't really want a third base competition. I want a third baseman is what I want that nobody questions.
I want a third baseman, I want a left fielder, and I want a competent shortstop until Connor Griffin gets here in June.
Well, he might be here in April.
That's a tough one, Limits, because who's going to come here, a competent shortstop, knowing he's going to get replaced any
minute? That's why Triolo will probably – I'm fine with
Triolo at short until Connor Griffin.
Yeah, I am too. He's one of those masters of every position. He's a gold glove guy. But I still think Connor Griffin should be up here at the beginning of the season. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Do you think he should be up here for some major league at-bats this season? I do.
I would have thought that already, and I said that, but so far it hasn't happened. But
are they talking about that?
Are they still involved in the playoffs? Where are they? I've lost track of.
So they got eliminated over the weekend.
Altuna was.
Yeah, they lost in game three of the three-game series. You really are okay with Jared Triolo being the shortstop for like 2 months?
Yeah, what are the alternatives?
Somebody on the free agent market?
Like, yeah, but his point is, why would someone come here knowing you're going to lose your job?
This would have been the perfect time for this type of IKF trade because he was decent at short, and then you move him to the bench in a utility role, which is what he's better suited as, like he's at doing in
Triolo.
Toronto.
Triolo is better than IKF.
What? As an offensive player or all around?
All around. What are you talking about? You want to go over IKF's numbers here, Limits?
Yes.
All right, let's do that. Let's do it in Pittsburgh.
Triolo couldn't hit a beach ball if you put it on a tee for him in the first half of the year.
Yeah, but he's come on better in this half of the year.
Exactly. Let's go in August. Let's go in August with IKF. A 619 OPS with zero home runs. Let's go back to July. He hit 229 with a 532 OPS and zero home runs. So could he hit a beach ball off a tee, Limits?
Why don't we compare it to Jared Triolo and what he did for a large majority of the season? Sure, he's been hot for a month. He's been better over the last month plus where he's hit four home runs. What did he do before that? Not much.
No, not much. He's not a very good hitter. Neither is IKF over the course of his whole career. What does he have, one home run this year?
He was a 290 hitter last year before they acquired him from Toronto. And then when he came here, he was a 260 hitter.
And then when he came here, he stunk. He has no power. I don't know what you're talking about.
Triolo in April hit 212, hit 135 in May. In June was 200, earned a demotion to the minor leagues.
Read me IKF season stats.
All right, let me pull them up.
Pull them up, Limits.
I was looking at Triolo.
You're making it sound like he's Cal Ripken, and Triolo compared to him is Mario Mendoza. Now, compared to Mario Mendoza, Triolo might be Mario Mendoza.
Kiner Falefa, 262, 39 runs batted in, 15 steals.
AOPS?
His OPS is currently sitting at 626.
Okay, so OPS, Triolo is 60 points higher in OPS and has how many home runs for this guy?
Triolo has seven home runs. IKF has one.
Yeah, right. That's all I need to know.
Me too. IKF also has
15 more RBIs and 30 points batted.
I don't give a damn
average.
About the batting
average.
You don't
care about batting
no,
average.
No, I care about power. And plus, Triolo is a better fielder.
He's a better fielder, too. So that, to me, and he's more, you know, understanding the role that he has with this team. If that means starting at shortstop, fine. And he knows what's coming.
He's not a starter in Major League Baseball.
He's actually a luxury. He's a luxury to have off the bench, I think.
He's a stopgap for 2 months. They have bigger fish to fry than who's going to play shortstop before Griffin gets somebody
to play left field regularly. As you're right, as soon as they sign him, he's your starter.
Yes.
No competition.
Right.
Third base is the same thing.
And a DH.
Well, that's the other thing. What will Andrew McCutchen do? He says he wants to come back. So what will the Pirates do?
That's a great, great question. The Pirates will acquiesce and invite him back because he's Andrew McCutchen. Andrew, and he's, I think, the most beloved Pirate since Willie Stargell. I also think that if all you can do at this point in your career is play DH, you can't run anymore, you're just an okay hitter at this point, you never play the field, you better be a really good hitter, and he's not anymore. And if you look across the National League or really across all of baseball, there are so many DHs putting up better numbers. If all you're going to do is hit, you better be a really good hitter, and he's not. They need an upgrade at
he's
DH.
He's still one of their better hitters this year, but...
That's like being the fastest man at the Harry Callis sprinting conference.
But what I'm
conference.
Saying is I always look at DH's Jeez. Power. I like...
Harry Callis taking a stray. Wow.
That was an Anthony
that
Richardson
stray. That was an Anthony
stray.
Richardson stray from Mike Tomlin, and now it's transformed to you. You're putting him out there. No, I think you need power from DH. I want to see a DH who's getting 35 home runs or 30. You know, in that range. I don't want...
And the other thing, Bob, is he's going to be, what, 39? I'd rather... Yeah. It's always best in sports to cut bait a year early than a year too late, and they're already tempting fate with McCutchen by continuing to bring him back. This was a nice little season. It needs to be the final one, in my opinion. You agree?
Yeah, I think, again, I want a DH who can hit a lot of home runs.
Limits, what do you think about that?
I would bring McCutchen back, but I would tell him, look, I mean, it might be in a little bit of a reduced role. You might only play two or three times per
week. If I have to tell my primary DH, listen, it's going to be a reduced role and you only play two times a week, then why is he my primary DH?
You have to make decisions best for your team at this point. Not, and again, I think Andrew McCutchen's terrific. I always have
what
he does.
Do. That's,
but it comes to a point where you have to make decisions that are better for your team. And right now they need, if they're going to spend money, that's going to be one of the prudent plays to do it. You got to get a bat, even if the guy can't play a position, just like McCutchen. Just somebody who's going to be out there to hit the ball. I would love to see him go after Suarez.
He's about to turn 39. He's a 0.3 WAR player. His OPS is down by 30 points this year. His home runs are down by 7. It's time. He doesn't help you in the field, obviously. He can't really run. It's time, and that's okay.
That is okay. And he'll still be one of the most popular Pirates in the history of their franchise.
Yes.
So nothing's changed in that regard. But for the Pirates to do what they have to do and take another step, they've got to figure out ways to get bats. Now, if they don't get a DH, but they do get a left fielder and a third baseman who can hit, then you can make a case maybe he should be back. Maybe not.
You get me left fielder and a third baseman who are really good, established major leaguers and good hitters, then I'll reconsider that. Maybe.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.